Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Well, directly across Cherry Road from the hallowed halls of Winthrop University, we have the interim president with us, Dr. George Hine, and he has not left the table, even though he had 5 minutes with John Reinhart. I thought for sure that would make you run right out the front door.
It has been most enjoyable.
Yeah, well, I bet it has been. You know, this character here, you know, I'm sorry that you had... How are you doing today, John? You all right? John's doing okay. So, George, thanks for coming over.
Yeah. I
asked you when you walked in, your title of interim runs out when?
The title of interim runs out, as do I, from the president's office on June 30th, 2022. So I haven't counted the months. I haven't counted the days. I'm enjoying being here and looking very forward to a new academic year. We have a lot to accomplish and much to do as the students will be arriving shortly.
Yeah, I was going to say, when do we start seeing the heads?
Well, you're going to start seeing the heads next week. I mean, the residence assistants will be coming back on campus, preparing for the students coming into the residence halls. I've already seen some of our faculty, frankly, on campus preparing for this new year. Classes start on the 23rd.
23rd is when they start. Wow. Yeah. All right. Are we going to do convocation?
Well, that's a really good question. The answer is yes. How we are going to do convocation this year is a little bit up in the air. We had planned, we had very good plans. Tim Durkee in our academic affairs office has been working on plans to have them in the convocation in the Coliseum. We're looking very forward to that. But considering the rise in the COVID rates, we are now looking at other possible venues for our convocation this year. So the answer is yes, but like all things on campus now, because of the COVID rising rates, we are reviewing all of our policies and procedures.
You know, it's I feel sorry for you because here you come to Winthrop for a two-year tour of duty, essentially.
Yes.
And you're the pandemic president. I mean, you've been here for what we had last year, which was just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And it starts to settle down, and we think things are going to get back to normal. And here comes Delta. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how are we preparing for August the 23rd? Are we going to be masked? Are we going to be unmasked? Are we going to be mandating vaccinations? How are we doing this?
Well, I think that's the question that's on everybody's mind these days. And I think like everybody who's probably listening, and certainly Allison and I, my wife and I, have talked about this. 8 weeks ago, we were very optimistic. We were going to restaurants. We were going out to events of one kind or another, meeting with friends, some friends we hadn't seen in a year and a half. And feeling very optimistic about the future. But a lot has changed in 8 short weeks. We are now very concerned. We all are concerned about the rising COVID rates. The COVID rates in our area, York County, have risen 300% over the last 2 weeks. The uplands, only about 30-some-odd percent of our individuals have been vaccinated. If you take into account the second dose, it may be in the 40s. So the poor vaccination rates are really causing, I think, havoc with all of us. And very unfortunately, and I say that as a university president, we are bound by legislative and governor dictates about whether or not we can require masks or vaccinations. Unfortunately, we cannot require masks on campus, nor can we require vaccinations. So with those as guardrails in which we need to operate, we are requiring our returning students to either show us proof of vaccination. They can upload it to a website we've developed, indicating that they have received the vaccination. And I'm very pleased to report that as of last week, we've already had about 1,000 students upload their vaccination, proof of vaccination. Or they can provide a proof of a negative test result 72 hours before they came back to campus. Or they can provide evidence that they've had COVID in the last 90 days, thinking that there may be some natural immunity. Mm. So that's the requirement for students coming back to campus. We are not requiring testing of our faculty or staff. They will be coming back. We are strongly encouraging, and we put signs up all over campus, we are strongly encouraging students, faculty, staff to wear masks. I met with the Council of Student Leaders here yesterday. They're back on campus preparing for the academic year, and they are going to be helping us, as will our staff assembly and others, encourage mask wearing, certainly in all of our buildings and certainly around campus in any large gatherings, even if it's outside. So we have the guardrails that have been established legally regarding vaccinations and mask wearing, and we're trying to operate with the best public health guidance that we can get within those guardrails.
Now, the governor has been very adamant about we're not going to put masks, that the responsibility should be with the parents,
right,
or the young adults, what have you, which seems to make a lot of sense. But in the real world, sometimes people don't use exactly what God gave them. And with that being said, you must be also preparing for what happens if we have an outbreak on the campus. And I don't know what triggers that, how that's measured.
Right. Well, I think that's, as I said, many of these same questions I think are on all of our minds right now. A couple of weeks ago, and more recently as a week ago, we've had conversations with healthcare experts. And the transmissibility of this virus, the Delta virus in particular, is five times that of the Alpha, the first COVID-19 virus. And what that means is, if you think about it in a kind of a statistical epidemiologic sense, with the first virus, the one on which actually the vaccination was developed, if there was one person, say out of 100, that had the vaccination, or that had the virus rather, for every large crowd, only one or two people would actually get the virus from that transmission. Now it's between 8 and 10 people will be infected by that virus. Mm-hmm. And the what's equally as worrisome, in fact even more worrisome, and this is not talked about very much, is that if you've had the vaccination and you're one of the 8 to 15% of vaccinated individuals that are infected with COVID, because those infections are happening, you may only have the symptoms of a mild cold. You may actually think that it's allergies, runny nose, kind of not feeling your best, and not even go to the doctor. If you go to the doctor and they actually do a nasal swab and look at the viral load that you have, it is the same as somebody that did not get vaccinated and is having a very, very bad case. So in other words, there's probably going to be people in the general population that don't feel sick enough to go to the doctor, don't even think about having COVID, and they may be spreading this virus five times more frequently than with the original virus. So we're very concerned as kids come back to school that we could have a mini outbreak, an epidemic, frankly, within the school very quickly. So it's not a matter of one or two cases here or there. It's a matter of 5, 10, 15, 20 cases maybe in a week. So that's one of the concerns we have. So we're going to be doing voluntary testing on campus. We're looking into a relationship we might have with a provider to provide free vaccinations on campus on a regular basis for those that are unvaccinated. So there's a lot to be concerned about as we move forward.
And I would imagine you're going to have mask dispensers all over the campus.
Well, we're going to have masks available for those that don't have their own, yes.
Mm. So we're also into the season of fall sports, which is big. Basically, you're just going to operate the same way? I mean, it's up to you as to how you want to come to that sporting event?
Yeah.
Whether you want to wear a mask, whether you don't want to wear a mask, that kind of thing?
Well, we're certainly looking into that as well. I think, you know, as I said, 8 weeks ago, we were all looking forward to returning to what was going to appear to be a new normal. Over the 8 weeks, much has changed with regard to the distribution of the Delta virus. We will be continuing to monitor our sporting events and the requirements for masks or not. I think as we start to think about sports that are in enclosed spaces, for instance, in the Coliseum, we're going to have to make some decisions about social distancing and how many spectators we may allow. To my knowledge, we are not to the point where we need to make any pronouncements about attending sports events. But the bottom line is, because of the legislative action, we cannot require masks pretty much on any event here on campus.
My.
Yeah.
You come here to keep pushing on academia and make Winthrop as good as you can make it, and you get sidetracked with all this. I mean, it takes a lot of hours to pull this stuff together.
We have a lot of other things going on. We have we're working on an academic master plan, new programs. There's very exciting opportunities for us, perhaps even offering doctoral programs at Winthrop University.
Wow.
Perhaps even professional doctoral programs, because the provisos that the legislature has voted on now allows comprehensive universities to consider changing a little bit of their mission statement. So we're looking forward to those kind of considerations that we might engage in on campus. We have consultants on campus right now, I believe it's this week, that are helping us develop a campus facilities master plan. That is very important to us, because if we add new programs, or even in relation to the programs we have, we need to make sure that the facilities we have are really up to snuff. Other things that are going on were, we have a dip in our enrollments this year, and we're working on a budget to accommodate that. In fact, we're working on a three-year budget plan that will help us stabilize our budget and allow us to make more informed decisions about budgets and expenditures going forward. So we're very excited about that. I'm also working with our advancement folks on working up and ramping up, I guess, our infrastructure so that the next president will have the opportunity, if they and the board choose, to launch a comprehensive fundraising campaign. Lots going on.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'm going to run out of time here, but let me go back to last year. You had basically the whole student body learning online, mm-hmm. a virtual program,
right.
And you've given the option, have you not, again this year, to do virtual online or not?
I've had good conversations with the Board of Trustees and our Academic Affairs Vice President or Provost, Adrian McCormick. And we are anticipating all of our classes, most of our regular classes, being in person, on campus. We will have probably somewhere around 10 to 12% of our courses will be online or hybrid, what we call hybrid, where you may do half of your coursework online and then the other half will be on campus. But we are committed to having students on campus, our classrooms full, and I think that's going to, we're pleased with that. But I also just got through looking at some data. Over the last few years, independent of the COVID year last year, our online course offerings were ramping up. College of Business was leading the way on that. And I think there's a pretty good trajectory that we will be following of over the next few years, ramping up the number of online courses. Frankly, a lot of our students have requested it, particularly in the graduate arena.
Interesting, because in the public school arena, they have mm-hmm. found that hybrid learning, as you call it, or the virtual mm-hmm. learning,
right.
hadn't really worked out that well
right.
in terms of what students have learned versus mm-hmm. having an in-person setting.
Right.
As who was it? The governor said the other day, he said, I think it may take years to recoup what has been lost in the K-12 programs because of how they were not able to get in the classroom and do face-to-face learning.
Right.
But that's different in higher ed?
Well, I think what I have seen, and this is from anecdotal reports with our student leaders and others as well, including our faculty, last year our freshman class lost their freshman experience because
yeah.
they came right out of high school wearing masks to college wearing masks, and that's a real problem. And having said that, I think this year we're going to have really two freshman classes. Those sophomores that didn't have a freshman class and a freshman class of new students this year. And we're going to try and provide as rich a college experience as we possibly can. We are all going to be requiring masks for sure. We're going to be encouraging mask wearing. It's going to be a challenging year. But having said that, I think it's important to understand that we are really aiming to have as much a normal year as possible. And we're going to have to deal with legislative edicts and the governor's perspective as we move forward.
And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Now, John Reinhart has been around here long enough to know what we're about to do. I believe even the good president here knows this. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week prepared right before your eyes. We're all going to chant it out together. That includes you, Doc. Are you ready? 1, 2, 3. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Save on your monthly mortgage payment with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage from Founders Federal Credit Union. Take advantage of low rates while they're still around, and you'll also have no private mortgage insurance costs. The application process is easy, and your mortgage is serviced completely by Founders and always stays with us. Relax, you're home. For more, visit foundersfcu.com/30. Membership qualification required. Credit evaluation, underwriting requirements, terms and conditions apply. Institutions, NMLS identifier number 410-64.
Water, fire, mold, and storms cause property damage every day. When it happens to you, it's no time for second best. That's why insurance professionals trust the locally owned and family-run Paul Davis Restoration of Rock Hill. This is Gina Rogers. Paul Davis is committed to providing extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Our team is highly qualified and trained to handle each situation with care and professionalism. When disaster strikes, call Paul Davis. We are here to help. 329-1140 or pauldavisrockhill.com.
When your health needs attention, you'll find compassionate care at Piedmont Medical Center. We make it convenient to treat emergencies with online check-in at locations in Rock Hill and Fort Mill. Or if you live with a heart condition, our cardiologists provide advanced treatment options to help you live better. And for pain that slows you down, a minimally invasive surgery can help speed you on to recovery. We are your community built on care.
PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
We're glad to see things are getting back to normal, and it's great to see everyone eating in and us getting a chance to catch up with y'all. This is Charlie Ruffalo. If you don't have time to sit and enjoy your lunch with us, I would suggest you order online at MySubstationII.com, and you can be in and out of the store in under 5 seconds. Just give us enough time to make your order before you arrive. We're open Monday to Saturday, 10 to 10, and we're still able to do catering 7 days a week. Once again, I want to thank you for your support through this pandemic. It means a great deal. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. Dr. George Hind is with us today. He is the interim president at Winthrop University. His tour of duty ends next June. And he's not counting the days. He just wants the COVID to go away, like we all do. I was teasing him during the break. I said, you could almost use an associate president just to handle the COVID issues. I mean, that must consume a great deal of your time.
It does. And I think what contributes to the consumption of that time is so many different questions people have about this. For instance, one of the questions I had yesterday, and I know I'm going to have it this afternoon when I talk to one of our faculty leadership groups, is if you're a professor or a faculty member sitting in your office and you have an autoimmune disease or you are somehow at risk, maybe you've been vaccinated, maybe not, can you request a student to wear a mask in your class when they come into your office for advising? And my advice is going to be yes, that is a reasonable request to make. And my advice to our faculty would be, if the student says, no, I'm not going to wear a mask, is to say, well, great. Let's see if we can schedule a time, and we'll meet out on the lawn.
Right.
I think that is a reasonable approach. But it's small but important issues like that and questions that we seem to deal with every day.
Let me switch gears with you. As a result of all this COVID stuff, Washington, D.C. has been handing out bucket loads of money to help businesses, help universities, school systems, what have you, get back up on their feet. You've received some of that money. Have you received more as a result of the ARRA Act, the American Recovery and Relief Act?
Yes.
You have?
Yes, we have. We have received basically three buckets from the federal government, referred to as the Higher Education Emergency Relief Act, which is, we refer to it as HERF. There's also the American Recovery Program, which is actually HERF 3.
We all call it Biden bucks.
Yeah, okay. We'll take Biden bucks or whatever bucks we can get. And, of course, the state has been very fortunate in terms of our revenues at the state level. A lot of that money is coming. The first federal funds we got had pretty significant boundaries about how we could spend them. The second infusion of resources, less boundaries. The third, we can actually hold on to those over several fiscal years. And that is going to help us greatly as we try and align our new budget model with the reality of reduced enrollments. So the point of all that money, though, is to help us, number one, get through the pandemic, which, of course, now looks like it is continuing, but it's also to position us well once we come out of the pandemic. The state has been very supportive, and we want to thank our representatives, such as Gary Simrell in particular, but also Wes Clymer, because they have been very strong advocates for us receiving state revenues for what we would refer to as rehabilitation and repair of our infrastructure. And our buildings, some of them are, you know, almost 100 years old and are in need of significant repair.
All right, let me see if we can get some round numbers here. The first bucket load of money you got was roughly how much?
It was about $7 million in my recollection. And about half of that, we were just basically a pass-through for money to go to the students.
Okay.
It was about $2.6 million of that first chunk of money that went directly to the students. The rest of it we kept to help us kind of move forward.
All right. Second bucket load?
Second bucket load, boy, I'd have to go back and look at the data, was somewhere around, it was about the same number in terms of the monies that we've received. The third bucket load is in that same neighborhood, as I recall.
All right.
Maybe $5 million on the last one.
Oh, my.
Whew. Well, it's a lot, but I will tell you, it's been important.
Right, yeah. Well, it's interesting because we're having this interview within 48 hours after Clinton College announced that they were going to take these same dollars and eliminate tuition for this coming school year. Not room and board, but tuition.
Right.
And they were also going to give computers to all of the students. Have you all thought about anything along those lines?
Yes, we have. In fact, we have a number of proposals that we'll be considering in the next couple of days at our leadership retreat. The answer is absolutely. And there's a couple of things underlying that. One is we want students to come back. One of the unfortunate consequences, at least in higher education, of the pandemic was a number of students came to college last year. They did most of their work remote, and they have not come back this year. So there's that population. There's also the population of students that know what happened last year and are graduated but are deciding not to come back to college. So it's very important that we entice those students back, because the worst thing in the world is for a student to have a year's worth of credit, drop out, and then never come back to finish the degree. So those kind of incentives programs, and I congratulate Clinton College for their leadership making that decision, are all aimed at getting those students back in the pipeline. Because once you decide to drop out or not come back for a semester, the probability of coming back again decreases over time.
So when you put a number on your incoming class for this year, you said it's going to be down. Is it going to be down percentage-wise or number-wise? How many students?
We're going to be down somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 9 to 10%.
Well, that's significant, isn't it? That's really significant.
Well, wow. We have it's a combined figure of our undergraduates and graduates, and I think our concern is exactly what I said: are those students that did not come back or decided not to go to college this year. We've also have more competition from USC and Clemson and other universities for our students. So it's a competitive environment out there, but we just hired a new enrollment vice president from LaGrange College, Joe Miller, and he will be joining us September 1, and part of his charge is to help us develop a strategic enrollment plan. And he is a very sharp, energetic young guy, and we're looking forward to work with him on an enrollment plan that will help us deal with kind of today's issues and also determine how we can best market that plan.
And I know that a lot of the college university curriculums today are all designed to get students and graduates into fields mm-hmm. where they can mm-hmm. you know, earn a living and right. pay back their student loans right. and what have you. Not a lot of stuff that I got when I was in college. So one of the things that has been, and I don't know whether this applies to universities or not, but it certainly has been in the news. It's very controversial. And that is, I guess the New York Times calls it the 1619 curriculum in reteaching how, yeah. you know, how they think history should have been written, what have you. Does that play at all in what's going on at Winthrop?
You know, I appreciate this question being our last question, right? And
because you got about 3 minutes.
I know. No. I'm smiling because the fact of the matter is that we as an institution, like probably every other institution in the state, has been teaching about Emancipation Proclamation, the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers. We have courses that require those readings. And so we've been doing a good job at that, frankly, over decades, as have many other institutions. And the whole notion of what you're referring to, we have faculty members that have expertise in that, and we have had them for like 10, 15, 20 years. And they have been teaching different perspectives, critical race theory being one of them, for decades. And it's not just at Winthrop. It is at every university probably in this state and elsewhere as well. It is simply a different perspective on history. There are different perspectives on history from a psychoanalytic perspective, if you would believe that or not, or from sociological perspectives. And the critical race theory is simply another perspective on history. And it's been, frankly, endemic in the academy for decades, but now it has become a politically hot topic, I guess is a good way to put it.
Well, as my dad always used to tell me, he said, you know, a college education is designed to teach, to do one thing for you. And I said, what's that, Dad? Teach you to stand up on your own two feet and think for yourself. So you get these different perspectives.
Yep.
You throw out what you think is a lot of BS,
right.
and you go with what makes sense for you, right?
Yes, absolutely. Right.
Well, Doc, you've done good. We covered a lot of ground. Good luck to you in the upcoming school year. I hope it all goes better than we might think it might go because of this virus.
I know it will, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Thank you.
We'll do it again, I promise you. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. All right, here we go. One more time. We have fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes here at Substation 2, 6 days a week, not seven. The magical formula at the count of three. We're all going to battle it out together. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. We got it. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.